This week we talk movie news, Sandman, Batman vs. Superman, as well as a look at the two shows on the air, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, and Mr. Harvey has some choice words to say about Frank Miller.
If you unsubscribe to our podcasts, our legion is doomed. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of The Rogues Gallery. I'm Jeff Hackworth, and we're here with Sonia Rodriguez from Corpus Christi, Texas.
Hello.
Jason Hunt in the studio in Kansas City.
Sitting here all by myself.
And joining us from Earth 2 is Tim Harvey.
Otherwise known as the other side of Kansas City. I have my cat with me.
Well, you have to have the cat to be the evil villain of the piece, right?
That's true, always.
Yes.
All right. Did the intro this week because 27 is my favorite number, and that's what episode this is.
Nice.
Indeed. Episode 27. Welcome, everyone. The Rogues Gallery here on Sci-Fi for Me Radio. This is the show where we talk about the DC Comics television shows. If you have an opinion you would like to share, you can send that to roguesgallery@scififorme.com. A programming note, starting with our next episode, we're going to switch back to an every other week schedule because of various different things that are going on with stuff with the staff and people and whatnot. So no episode next week, but we will be back the week after next. We want to get that out there early for those of you who listen to the first 5 minutes and then go away. And those of you who stick with us, then you'll know what's going on. Okay, where shall we begin?
Well, we could go with the least watched show amongst us. Gotham.
Well, I tell you what, why don't we save Gotham for the last because it, okay. You know, because Tim and Sonia, neither one watched the show. So if anything, you and I could kick that around and then they could just peanut gallery it with random snarky comments.
Okay.
Okay.
Like right. Every other week.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay.
And many snarky comments should be had about this episode.
Yes. Well, yes, there is that. I think let's look at movie stuff here for just a quick second because we do have some things what's going on in the DC movie universe. Over the weekend, Joseph Gordon-Levitt announcing that he's leaving the Sandman project, and those of you who are not familiar, Sandman, this is Neil Gaiman's Sandman, based on the Vertigo comic title, which is, Vertigo was the more mature graphic novel line from DC Comics, so technically it's a DC Comics movie, and the reasoning is what, creative differences with the new production house, New Line Cinema. So, the movie just lost its star, director, producer all at once.
Yeah.
So, and Mr. Harvey is working on a think piece on what that actually means for the project. We'll post that over at scififorme.com here very soon. So now the clock is ticking on you, Tim. Yeah, when Warner Brothers bumped it to New Line, that to me says we don't want to spend very much money on it.
Well, to counter that, although New Line is often a place where lower budgets, also remember that New Line is Lord of the Rings. Remember that New Line is the Rush Hour movies, were usually profitable. Austin Powers movies, Wedding Crashers, Sex and the City, the Conjuring films. So they are willing to put money where they want it to go. So the larger question here, and it will be covered in a lot more depth in the article, is the adaptability of the material for me. Mm-hmm. Sandman is a series that would benefit a lot more from being a Netflix or Showtime or HBO 10-episode, 12-episode series, because it's if you look at the 75 issues of Sandman and the specials and everything like that, you're not necessarily going to find something that is a straight through line, hour and a half, standard story structure, story to tell. Oddly enough, the earliest ones, the earliest comics are the closest to that. But even there, they rely very heavily on regular DC continuity. Because of the way that Morpheus weaves himself into the larger DC universe. Now, they get away from that quite a bit later, and they go rather deep and wide when it comes to higher-end comic storytelling. But it's, no matter what, it was always going to be a challenge to get this film to happen.
Right.
And so while I am disappointed, I'm also not terribly surprised. And while creative differences is often a euphemism for you guys completely don't understand the material, it doesn't have to be. And I could very easily see somebody who is looking at a standard story structure film versus someone, say, like a recently departed director, producer, writer, and saying, "Look, this is not a marketable story," because of course that's what studios do. They don't look at whether or not it's a good story; they look at whether it's a marketable story.
Right.
And marketable and good are not always hand in hand, which I'm sure we've noticed over time.
Don't know what you're talking about. What?
So it's disappointing, but it's also the fact that they got this far at all.
Well, and they still have the writer. They still have, because they just brought this guy on board and announced him the day before Gordon Levitt left.
Right.
Eric something, I think, was his name. And
he worked on the Conjuring films.
Yeah.
And I've seen several people get quite unhappy that he was brought on board because of his track record, but that's, again, not necessarily a big deal. I mean, there's, you know, it's every writer, we've seen over and over and over again how many writers are not shy about talking about how they the script that they wrote versus the script that
gets produced.
Yeah, it's not the same thing. I mean, right out loud, when you have Kurtzman and Orky complaining about you know, how badly, you know, a Transformers movie butchered their script. you know, so.
Well, and we've heard reports that Ben Affleck has been rewriting Batman vs. Superman on set in costume. So, you know, these kind of things. This is standard in Hollywood. For those of you who don't follow this kind of thing, it is normal for the script as written to be completely different by the time it gets anywhere near the screen. I mean, shooting, it changes during shooting, it changes during editing, it changes during reshoots. So, yeah, it's. I'm figuring that Gordon Levitt, I think the creative differences are actually what, I mean, because he says that's what it was. I don't think he's using it euphemistically here. I think he actually said, "We don't see this project the same way anymore. I'm out," which is kind of a shame because this has been a labor of love for him, a passion project for a long time.
Oh yeah, and he had the support of Neil Gaiman and the support of a lot of fans. There was some fan backlash because several people had a real issue seeing him playing the part. I didn't really have a problem with him playing the part. He has something of the look, and he's certainly a very good actor. So that didn't particularly concern me.
You know who'd make a good Morpheus? Keanu Reeves.
Oddly enough, the answer to that question is yes. Because, actually, Keanu's limitations as an actor do actually lend themselves well to the character. The problem is that audiences would be horribly, horribly confused by a film where the title character, played by Keanu Reeves, doesn't do a single martial arts move, doesn't shoot anyone.
doesn't ride a motorcycle.
Has no romantic love interest.
Yeah.
And discusses the philosophical nature of destiny, death, destruction, delirium, delight, and dream, all his siblings. So, yeah, it would be a hard sell, actually. That's a really bizarre thing here, is that you are better served having an actor who is not a big name actor. And while he is certainly a very fine actor, and he has shown his, he's great in ensemble roles, and he's been great in lead roles as well. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is not the box office draw necessarily that some, other actors are. So it's disappointing. It's not surprising. It doesn't mean the project is dead. It doesn't mean the project is ruined for all time. There is also the argument that could be made that passion projects sometimes need someone to come along and say, no, you can't do that. So... unfortunately, we are left with the vague creative differences, which actually covers a wide range of things.
Yep.
So, until we get more information. But yeah, I'll talk a little more about the history of the adaptation and where I think it should go.
All right. That will post over at scififorme.com here in the next few days. In the meantime, let's switch gears a little bit to... I was about to say Man of Steel. Batman versus Superman just popped up on the ticket pre-sales tracking algorithms out there. We're 4 weeks out. And the projections are that this will be the fifth highest opening superhero film of all time. They're projecting anywhere from $300 to $340 million worldwide, $140 of that domestically in the U.S. I don't know that it's going to do that much, personally. But, that's the projected number right now that they're expecting for Batman V Superman. And, we also get... is it Greg Silverman over at Warner Brothers acknowledging that the Green Lantern movie wasn't all that great, but also saying that Green Lantern, the current version is going to be, probably is not going to show up until Justice League Part 2. So we know that Flash and Cyborg are at least making cameos in Batman V Superman, and they're going to be in Justice League Part 1, along with Batman and Aquaman and Superman and Wonder Woman, but no Green Lantern, which is really odd, because everybody over there is like, oh, Green Lantern is such a fantastic character. Well, why are you waiting to use him then? So, I don't know. I don't see it doing $340 million.
Maybe part one is whenever he gets the ring and he's trying to figure out... maybe it's civilian Green Lantern that we get in part one. And he'll actually don the costume in part two.
Possibly. Well, and Jenna Malone's been cut out. So whoever she's with, I mean, we got early word, the rumor was that she's playing Barbara Gordon, but now we're not going to see at all because apparently her role has been cut from Batman vs. Superman completely.
Like on the cutting room floor?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, the scenes, I guess, were shot, at least some of them, but they didn't make the final cut. But, I mean, this is the kind of thing like we got with the Spider-Man movies, with Shailene, supposedly playing Mary Jane Watson, and ended up not. I mean, they shot the scenes, but it never made it into the final cut of the film, so Shailene Woodley never really played Mary Jane Watson. This is going to be some kind of the same kind of thing.
Where, and it's kind of like what we got with Rogue in Days of Future Past.
Right.
We had one or two scenes with her, but the rest got moved into its own cut of the film.
Well, see, that's a little bit of a different thing because Anna Paquin had been playing Rogue already. You know, this is a brand new Barbara Gordon, and everybody knew that she's going to be in the film. And it's kind of a shame, you know, I feel bad for Jenna Malone because this could have been a pretty big deal. But, you know, now there's, you know, either they didn't like her performance or it didn't fit into the narrative of the story, or they cut for time, you know, whatever reason it could be, you know, now there's a chance that the studio could backpedal a little bit and decide that she's not the best Barbara Gordon they could get, and they go out and they get somebody else. Not to say that's going to happen, but, you know, weirder things have happened in the movies.
Yeah.
I don't know. You guys think $340 million is realistic?
Well, what did Deadpool open with?
Oh. What did Deadpool do opening weekend?
Money.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to guess a little bit less than Deadpool.
Well,
whatever that number is, take well, 10,000 off.
Deadpool's just cleared into the top 50 grossing films of all time, if you can believe that. But I don't know.
He's talking about like when they opened.
Right. No. I understand that because now cumulatively he's up over 600 million. But opening weekend, I want to say. 150, it broke box office records. 190?
Okay, let me say 150.
You think 150? Domestic?
For Batman, Superman.
You're talking domestic, though. I don't know. What are the rest of you think?
Okay, Man of Steel, the original, the first of these films, its opening weekend, it did 116 million, almost 117 million on its opening weekend. And everything has just been arcing up here for superhero films. So it's not unreasonable if you factor in your, I think that's just domestic. It's worldwide numbers. And that's still, actually, that's not unrealistic when you consider that lower than Avengers, Avengers Age of Ultron, and Spider-Man 3.
Yeah.
Deadpool
opened at 132.
Okay. Yeah. So,
now,
$350
million. That's what they're projecting, $350 million.
Yeah.
$300 to $340 million, actually. But that actually puts it a little further down the pack for big budget, giant studio, high promotion superhero pictures. That's not unreasonable.
Well, and given the fact that Man of Steel opened with nobody knowing just how bad it was going to be, now we've got Man of Steel out there as a standard of measure that we can sit there and go, oh, you know, Batman versus Superman is going to be more of the same. You know, grimdark brooding Superman just doesn't work for some people. So I'm wondering if that might have an impact on it.
Well, it certainly might, but also bear in mind that for a significant chunk of the audience, they liked the movie. Whatever we feel about what they did with the character, it was an extremely popular film with general audiences. And general audiences are the target audience, not the superhero fans.
Yeah, I know.
Not the comic book fans. And
can I just price of right and lowball this and say like $16?
I was going to bid a dollar. That is so funny, Jeff. I was thinking the same thing. I was like, everybody put a bid in so I can do my Price is Right bid of a dollar and win without everybody going over. I was just thinking that.
I don't know. I get it. I'm gonna say 120 domestic. Not 140. I think it's going to come in south of what they're expecting. Because...
Oh, certainly.
Why would they expect 350?
Well, that's world... That's
big
the
number.
That's the worldwide number.
Oh, okay.
That's not domestic. Domestic, they're expecting anywhere from 120 to 140.
I think they might get that.
I don't
does
know.
It all, see, oh, does it... open in all the countries around
yep.
the same time?
It's going to open like worldwide, including China. It's going to
wow.
open everywhere all at the same time. So
yeah,
that's going to have an impact, too.
I think it's not unreasonable. I think for the folks who like the first film or who are willing to give the second one a chance, it's going to be, you know, they'll show up and buy their tickets. And for the folks who... you know, didn't like it and have no interest in watching it, they won't. That's every other movie ever made.
Yeah.
But again, considering that they are projecting it lower than Iron Man 3, lower than Spider-Man 3, and we all remember how well Spider-Man 3 did.
Well, and I'm wondering how much of an impact it's having with the reports. And I didn't see it anywhere else, but Drew McWeeny over at HitFix was sitting there saying that the suits at Warner Brothers are a little bit worried because the movie they've got wasn't necessarily the one they were expecting to get. Now, we haven't, you know, since then, we've had some executives come out and say, oh, yeah, it's great. But that could just be, you know, here's the talking points from the home office. But if there is... that worry on the back end of what this is going to do, and we've got rumor, and again, it's just rumor, and it's not anything that's been substantiated anywhere. We've got rumor that if this movie doesn't do as well as it does, as well as they hope, that could shake up the lineup for all of the rest of the films. Now, we know that Justice League has started to... When do they start shooting? They start shooting, what, next month? April.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's officially announced, which kind of puts a little bit of a pin in the balloon for McWeeny's report. And then, of course, we've got the Green Lantern Corps film is still scheduled for 2020. So we haven't gotten any official changes in the lineup or the schedule or anything like that, although this is the first we're hearing that Green Lantern is not going to show up until very, very late in the process, which I think is a mistake. Personally, you
know, maybe they're having casting problems.
Well, the rumor is this one guy who's technically he's on IMDb as a test pilot is the guy. You know, the word is that they already have cast Hal Jordan Green Lantern, and he's in Batman versus Superman, but he's not Green Lantern. And that could go back to what you were talking about, Jeff, where the first time we see him, he's not got his ring yet. And that may happen in this movie, or it may happen in Justice League.
Or maybe in The Flash, or maybe Cyborg.
I don't know. I think if they're going to introduce Hal Jordan, they're going to do it either in Batman vs. Superman, or they're going to do it in Justice League Part 1. It would make sense to do it in a real quick piece in this movie, because somewhere in there he's going to have to get his ring, and they're going to have to spend time to show him getting his ring. And either one of the Justice League movies are not going to be the most appropriate place to tell Hal Jordan's origin story.
Right.
Well, a couple of things there, though. First of all, they could be waiting to wipe the palette on the previous Green Lantern movie now that they are willing to admit that it was bad.
Yeah, but how long are they going to wait? I mean, it's already been how many years?
Jason, how long have they been waiting? How long did we have to wait to get a Supergirl TV series versus a Supergirl movie? Wow.
Like 20-something years?
There you go. I mean, that's, you know, Hollywood is a business, and they are a skittish business. And, you know, we're still waiting to get a Black Widow movie, which is an incredibly popular Avengers character, and those films made all the money. I mean, there's so many different reasons for these guys to give themselves excuses why not to do something. We see it over and over and over again. So, you've got Ryan Reynolds out there blowing up the universe with Deadpool, but the last Green Lantern movie was a Ryan Reynolds picture that was crap. Unless you come completely out of the left field with a different Green Lantern, which, you know, is certainly an option. It doesn't have to be Hal Jordan. And if they're going with Hal Jordan, then they're stuck with the fact that we had Hal Jordan not too long ago.
Right. That would be Dan Amboyer, listed on the IMDb credits as drone pilot. And, yeah, so he's the guy that all the rumors and all the reports are saying he's Hal Jordan.
So maybe Flash runs really fast to try to race the airplane or something. And he's driving it.
Maybe Flash runs really fast to try and erase the history of
Ryan Reynolds as Green Lantern.
Yeah, so there's a lot of different things this could be. So, it sounds so much like our appearances of any of these characters in Batman versus Superman are going to be so quick. They're basically going to be fan service cameos that we're going to sit there and go, oh, that's the thing, you know? And I don't, if you're looking at coming back with the Green Lantern core as being your big Green Lantern picture, then introducing, the Green Lantern in earlier may not necessarily make sense to these guys if they're planning on making him part of an ensemble cast.
Or maybe they don't include the Green Lantern from Justice League in the core movie. Maybe they focus on separate Green Lanterns in the core movie. Like, maybe you have Hal in Justice League, but you have John and Guy or John and Kyle in the Green Lantern core movie.
Possibly. Well, and to Tim's point, though, but if they're hesitant to introduce Green Lantern until he's in an ensemble picture, Justice League is an ensemble picture.
Right, but there you're sharing it with all these other iconic characters. You put him in an ensemble picture where he's one of, you know, a bunch of other people just like him. Your story arc is actually a lot more simple because he's the one who rises above them. He's the one who stands out. And that's actually, you know, that's classic military storytelling. And potentially, you know, honestly, it would be not a bad idea to actually treat the Green Lantern core with a little bit of a military structure.
Especially if they do a Sinestro War storyline.
Well, I mean, the Green Lantern core is technically the space police. So it wouldn't be too much of a stretch to militarize them a little bit.
Well, even if you treat it almost like a police procedural, which actually the story could lend itself well to.
Law and Order Space.
Exactly. Yeah.
now I want to see Law and Order. Oh,
there you go. Well, and you've got corruption because the Guardians themselves are just horribly, horribly, horrible people.
Right.
And you have the Manhunters.
Yeah, there's a lot of different things you could do with it, and depending on who is controlling the overall arc of the storytelling here, who is their showrunner for the DC universe? You know, and we've talked about this too. Who we think probably is the showrunner now?
Yeah.
And his name sounds like mine.
Yeah. And if Geoff Johns is in fact the showrunner, I could see him holding back on Green Lantern. Because Green Lantern and the Flash are babies of his.
Yeah.
Right.
Because he,
I could see him holding back and giving
dead.
I could see him giving Green Lantern, you know, and going, ah, I have plans.
Well, not only did he bring those two back from the dead, but he also revitalized Aquaman. So he's got those three, and he's written Justice League for a number of months. So,
good. This is not impossible that this could be. And honestly, you know,
there's got to be some finesse to it because of what happened. So you got to make sure they get it right.
And I would love it actually if he's the guiding hand on the tiller now. And if I could very easily see him going, you know, we're going to hold back and do this right.
In the Harley Quinn Little Black Book comic I read this week, it's number 2. It features Green Lantern. Harley is in a bidding war with a guy who looks suspiciously a lot like Geoff Johns over a Green Lantern ring.
Has he got the ball cap?
Yeah.
Is he wearing the ball cap? Yep.
He wears his lucky Green Lantern shirt, and he wins the Green Lantern ring off eBay.
Yeah, that is so funny when was it a Harley Poison Ivy issue that DiDio and the DC Comics staff showed up in a meeting at one point in one scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've been playing a lot of fast and loose, you know, fourth wall stuff over there with those characters.
It was so funny.
Let's talk about Supergirl.
All right.
Thoughts on these last couple of episodes? We've had Indigo. We've had the Master Jailer.
And we've had drama.
Well, the stuff going on between Hank and Alex and Kara, of course, it actually played out pretty well, better than I expected it to, and it thankfully was shorter than I was thinking they would do. I'm glad to see that they didn't draw that out into, you know, five or six or seven and on. But how fun was it to see the Omega Hedron at the end of the last episode?
That was cool.
Little shout out to the movie that Helen Slater starred in.
Yeah.
And what was the other thing? Oh, the fact that Indigo was Brainiac 8.
Yeah.
That was a nice touch as well.
So, what do you think here? We're actually going to get a really good Brainiac on TV for a change?
Well, we got one. I mean, Laura Vandervoort playing Indigo, who is a Brainiac. I don't know if we're going to get any other Brainiacs. But I was expecting maybe we would.
I think that it's a good place to start, because there certainly have been plenty of for all of the occasional good moments that Smallville did have in the course of 10 years. I mean, statistically, they had to have some.
They had one or two.
Okay, in all fairness to the Smallville fans out there, the show didn't work for me. I understand that it worked for a lot of people. I think a lot of people would agree that it did go on way too long.
Yeah.
It was a 5-year show that went on for 10. But the last really good Brainiac we had was, of course, an animated Brainiac.
Yeah.
And so to actually have Brainiac show up on Supergirl, is actually really cool. I actually thought I was pleased.
Well, and
that
I like
the reveal that I was okay with.
I liked too the fact that they pulled from the animated series in having Brainiac be a computer system from Krypton. You know, that part of it, that's lifted from the cartoons, which I thought was a nice touch. You know, they're pulling from the continuity of a lot of the different versions in order to give us those wink and a nod and the Easter egg and very, very fun to see all of that come together in that episode. Because, you know, when stepping up and creating this virus, this computer virus based on Kryptonian code. He had some pretty nice snippy one-liners this week.
Very Independence Day.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it did. It did actually feel like that, didn't it? Welcome to ARF. Yeah, we've got.
And I was right about the giant key for the Fortress of Solitude.
How fun was that? I laughed out loud when I saw the giant key.
Now it wasn't as big as it was in the comics, but it was still heavy because it's made from a dwarf star, and I thought that was really cool.
And she goes, "What, does he just leave it under the mat?"
Yes, that was an awesome line.
Well, and Fortress of Solitude looked great.
It did.
There is a lot more Silver Age vibe to this show than I actually expected there to be.
Yeah,
and that's good. I mean, that is really good. But I've been pleasantly surprised by that.
Well, and there's a nice mix there because you've got the Kryptonian robot inside, and that's from the John Byrne reboot that we got after Crisis. You've got the statue of his parents holding up Krypton. That's from later versions of the Superman mythology. So there's a good mix. But yeah, you're right. A Silver Age vibe definitely going through this.
You got his ship. And you got the Legion flight ring.
Yeah, how fun was that to see? And actually, that's the shot of the ring. That's the shot that showed up on the bleed over on the Flash. Oh. The in-between dimensions when we got all those different images. So I'm wondering if we might get something of a connection there as well.
As cool as it was to see all the stuff inside there, I was a little disappointed by the interior walls. I thought it would look a little bit more like the movie. I guess I was building it up in my head. So when they actually got inside, the stuff was cool, like seeing the ship and all that stuff. But I just thought it looked
kind
so
of plain.
Right, the walls looked just a little plain, and I was like, "Okay, where's the crystal stuff that's supposed to be all over the place?"
Right, you were looking for the sparkly crystal, and we got snow.
Yeah, we got snow. Exactly, that's exactly it. Yes.
I was missing Superman's zoo of exotic alien animals that he has.
Well, that's on another level. That's just that's off. They haven't built that set yet, right?
Right.
It's coming.
It looked like we only saw one. We saw the trophy room.
Yeah.
What, or the room with his stuff.
What was that other thing? There was something else in there. There was a red. It almost looked like a Kindle type of thing, like a little pad, a computer pad over on one of those pedestals. You don't think it's a mother box, do you?
If it is, it's a throwaway because it's a cool thing for the audience because they don't have the budget to go all New Gods on us here.
No,
not
yet. Awesome, but let me qualify that. At the most, they would get Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. level budget. To do, the Inhumans on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., we would get that level of New Gods. So
maybe it's a chunk of red kryptonite.
I don't think he'd leave that out in the open.
Maybe it's protected by an invisible field or something.
Maybe. I like to think it's a mother box, though. That would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Sure.
Time travel. Let's skip over to Legends of Tomorrow now. Because we've got a little bit more flashback. This was probably the most Easter egg heavy episode out of all of these shows. And it wasn't DC Comics Easter eggs. It was Star Trek and Star Wars Easter eggs throughout the entire episode. How fun was that?
And we didn't even talk about last week's episode either.
Oh,
when they went to 2046.
Yes, and they saw Oliver Queen, and we got Connor Hawke.
And who was the son of Diggle.
That was an interesting twist. I was surprised when they did that.
You know what? I didn't mind that so much because it does... I mean, in the comics, Ollie is the Captain Kirk of the DC Universe. I mean, he basically has slept with about half of the characters in the comics. Between him and Dick Grayson, they're...
they've got everybody covered.
They pretty much do. And unlike Dick, Ollie tends to have a bunch of kids. And he's got a lot of kids in the comics. Well, okay, like four or five.
More than Dick has.
Well, and you just sit there and go, Ollie, for the love of God, you can go to the convenience store and make a purchase. So that's actually okay. And it does, it strips away another potential storyline stumbling block. I mean, you could have, if you would have brought that in as Oliver's kid that got caught up in the dark storyline and has been the whole impetus for the latest breakup between Ollie and Felicity, then that would be one thing. But I think this actually works pretty well.
Yeah. I liked it. So, I thought it was good.
It didn't bother me at all.
His makeup looked great. His hair and makeup for
the goatee.
I'm talking about Oliver now. Yeah. Sorry. Old Oliver. His hair and makeup looked great.
And I'm wondering how long it... Because having a goatee myself, and as shaggy as it gets fairly quickly, it never gets any longer. You know, so I'm wondering how long would it actually take to
make it
to
like
get
that
length, right? I don't
about
know.
About 30 years, about apparently.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I saw a picture of myself taken about 2007 when I actually had my goatee longer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really surprised because I never let it grow that long. And I can't for the life of me think about why I did it then. But it was actually fairly long, and so it can be done, and good, all you can do is hit the internet and search for photos of such things, which will probably be dangerous.
husband's goatee gets pretty long. He can grow it pretty long, and it doesn't take him that long to grow it that long.
But also bear in mind that, of course, if you're going to go play in the Dark Knight future, which they did here, if you don't give Ollie the long goatee, you're missing out on an opportunity to sit there and go, look, we went there too.
Yep. Well, and I like the fact that he's missing an arm too, because that's very much Dark Knight Returns, which was...
Didn't want to use the cybernetic arm that he got.
The irony of this strikes me, because here we are all excited to see Dark Knight Returns Oliver Queen on Legends of Tomorrow, and yet we have misgivings about Dark Knight Returns Batman vs. Superman showing up in this new movie, which is essentially what they're doing. But...
Well, I think the difference is that for some fans, going to visit is not the same thing as going to live there.
True. And the fact, like we've talked about before, they haven't earned that moment between Batman and Superman yet. There's no history between these two characters yet on the big screen. And I think that's going
to
hurt.
That's why they think they're going with the story that they're going with, which is to tie it into the first one's level of destruction. Because to give them the kind of emotional power. And here's the funny thing. Because we've got a new Dark Knight miniseries out that is pretty clearly not being actually written by the person whose name is on the tin, because it's not as crazy as some of his earlier work.
You're talking about the Dark Knight Returns 3.
Right. And for those who, for everyone who praised The Dark Knight Returns, the second one has as, the second series has as many haters as it does praise. And I'm one of them. I personally thought the second miniseries was awful. And quite frankly, there's a pretty good argument to be made that outside of the Sin City books, Frank Miller's comic book stuff has gone off the rails a long time ago.
Is it Greg Capullo or no? Greg Capullo is an artist. It's Brian Azzarello that's co-writing with him, right, on this one?
Right. And a lot of people think that Brian Azzarello is actually the lead writer, and that maybe Miller gave him the story arc, but because this is Frank Miller is rightly praised for his Daredevil run, for the early Sin City books, for as crazy as it was, his Elektra series. He's kind of a nut. I mean, he's kind of, and that's being polite. There's a reason why Batman Holy Terror, DC sat there and went, we're going to pass. Because it was, a four issue screed of racism and bigotry. So probably not what you want to attach to your best selling character in your entire comic line.
Right.
Probably not.
I mean, so Miller is amazingly talented, but he's also crazy. And that's fine because, genius and sanity.
Yeah, it borders on crazy.
There's this weird dynamic I think people have in really loving the Dark Knight comics, but they don't necessarily age well.
Yeah.
And, I mean, between Dark Knight Returns and Watchmen, that was the kickoff of the angsty, grim superhero world.
Well, and the Killing Joke in there as well.
Yeah, and we suffered through the 90s. If you were a comic book reader in the 90s, you suffered from the fallout from that in ways that it's hard. Yeah. It's actually hard for modern audiences to understand how bad it was.
Yeah, it got pretty dark in there. Well, see, and we're still getting fallout from it because they're talking about the animated Killing Joke adaptation being R-rated. We've got the discussion of, the DVD version of Batman versus Superman is going to have an R-rated cut. Although it was good, it's interesting and kind of disheartening at the same time that Suicide Squad is PG-13, and the filmmakers actually have to defend the decision to do PG-13 instead of R. And you have the guys over at Marvel Studios sitting there going, we don't have any plans to make an R-rated superhero film. And for us to be at this point where now it's noteworthy that you're not making an R-rated movie after Deadpool, that only plays up James Gunn's prediction on how the studios were going to completely misread the success of Deadpool and take the wrong lessons from that. And right off the, it was almost immediate we started seeing that.
Well, but also you'll notice the reaction you're getting from the studios is basically them saying, no, we're not doing that. R-rated cut of Batman v Superman, all it requires is one person to say a word that I would get bleeped out on here. Once. All you have to do is have one character say one word that starts with F.
I know.
One time, and it goes to R. Or you get X, X more blood. Superman punches Batman in the mouth and a tooth goes flying. And if you do it, make it look realistic, that's an R rating. I mean, the MPAA... their guidelines are crazy and have been crazy forever.
Yeah.
So, the idea is there's an R-rated cut, or okay, maybe Wonder Woman stands up and we get a little more side of a breast than we're allowed with a PG-13 cut. It doesn't mean anything. I mean, Deadpool as an R rating was a specific thing because swearing, nudity,
right,
blatant discussion of sex.
But I'm gonna disagree with you on it doesn't mean anything, because we're talking. It's not the fact that we're looking at an R-rated cut versus a PG cut or a PG-13 cut. It's the fact that we're talking about Superman and Batman and an R-rated version of anything that I think has a lot of people concerned, because these, you know, the iconic nature of those two characters more than any other is such that
it's beneath them.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. Yes. Cool. I think this would tarnish the image of both characters for a long time. And I think that Warner Brothers is looking at the money. Warner Brothers is looking at money. They're not looking at anything else.
Okay. But that, again, doesn't mean anything, because they're not releasing an R-rated cut into theaters. If they're releasing an R-rated cut into theaters, then perhaps, yes. But you could argue that several of the Batman films at various points in MPAA history would be rated R. Dark Knight, the second Nolan Batman film, if it had been released in 1988, would have been rated R.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything. Should it mean something? Of course it should mean something. We should be able, if you are a parent taking your child to the movies, you should, you know, PG, PG-13, R, NC-17, these should mean something. But the reality is that if you look at the history of the MPAA, there is no consistency. Zero. None.
Yeah, it's completely subjective based on who's in
there. Because you look at an R rating, it's a huge window. I mean, once you hit R, like, you know, if you're going to hit R by doing one swear word, it's a big difference from hitting R and being well beyond that, but just being under NC-17.
Yeah.
That R window is huge.
But the thing is, so's the PG-13.
Yeah.
So if you can say every swear word up to the F word on a PG-13 film, you have a specific number of times you can say them, which is insane in itself. You can show someone getting murdered in a PG-13, but if you show a breast in PG-13, you're an R movie. There is no consistency here. So getting worked up about an R-rated cut of Batman versus Superman only works if you've seen the R-rated cut of Batman versus Superman. Because once, if you see it and go, whoa, you guys went too far, okay, fine. But if you see it and go, what? Huh? I saw worse than that on Netflix.
Well, and you know, you've got some of that creeping into the animated pictures, even. You know,
it doesn't necessarily have to be the main characters doing the R-rated things.
Right.
Well, that's true. The Killing Joke should be rated R. The Killing Joke is not a comic book for children. It was never a comic book for children. It should not be an animated picture for children. If you're going to do an animated version of The Killing Joke, you make it an R rating, because it's not for kids. The comic book was not for kids. It deals with psychological damage, sexual assault. And if anyone thinks that Barbara Gordon was not sexually assaulted in that comic book, they didn't read it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is brutal. It's a brilliantly written work. I mean, but it is not for kids, and it has never been for kids. And I don't want to see. I don't want to see a Killing Joke version that's PG-13 or PG, because I don't think a kid reading a comic book should be reading that. It was an adult story for adults at the time. It's an adult story now.
I just get concerned that all of the filmed media stuff is coming to a point, at least on the DC side. The filmed media is coming to a point in the movies and in the animated stuff where they're aging themselves out, as it were. They're making all of it in a way that is not accessible to kids anymore. And that's a problem for me as a parent, one, but also as a fan, because, okay, let's project this long range down the line. Looking out over my lawn, I see no extended audience. I mean, one of the reasons why, and we talk about this in advertising classes and in marketing schools and whatnot, you want to develop what's called brand loyalty. And in order to develop brand loyalty, you have to attract new consumers to your product at an early age, depending on what their product is. You know, if you're selling a car, you want to get them when they're 20-something, and then, you know, they're buying their next car from you and their next car from you and their next car. You know, we're going to buy Chevys all the way till we die type of thing. Comic books are the same way. You have your entry point for the various different ages in the print medium. But the filmed medium is going away. It's at that point now, past Flashpoint, from Flashpoint on. You can't sit and watch these animated pictures, the cartoons, with your kids.
No, you can't.
And I think that's one of the reasons why people are clamoring for a season 3 of Young Justice, because that's something that's not, it hasn't been touched by the grimdark yet. You're getting the alien invasion stuff.
I don't think that's a problem, because they're not kids forever.
Well, no.
As soon as they're 18, they can start watching anything.
They can start watching, but you got nothing you can sit and watch with them when they're 10.
Okay.
I think there's plenty to watch besides this stuff.
Hold on. A couple of things. The animated movies are not made for general audiences. They are made for the comic book audiences. All you have to do is look at the sales numbers to see that that's the case. Okay, they're not marketed the way the big general audience stuff are. They are marketed to the comic book fans.
Right.
Okay, so yes, I want Young Justice season 3 really, really bad. It was one of the finest DC animated pictures they ever did, or animated series they ever did.
And this is when you're supposed to be binge watching all of this. They just added season 2, so you got to be binge watching now so Netflix can look at the numbers.
Oh, so, exactly. Yes. Please do, folks, because that was really great storytelling. And some of the best adaptations of some of those comic book characters that we've ever seen, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
But. So many of the things that they have been adapting have been existing comic book stories. There have been some originals, to be sure. The Suicide Squad movie was an original. The Wonder Woman picture was an original. And criminally underrated, by the way. The Wonder Woman, go seek out the Wonder Woman animated film. It's really good.
Yeah, it is.
But so much of what they've been adapting has been existing material. They are not changing it. They're not making it grimmer or darker than the original source material. In most cases, they're toning it down. And the reason they're doing that is because those comics sold well. They're not adapting the series that didn't.
Oh, well, okay. To be clear, I'm not sitting here saying, I don't understand why they're doing it this way. I know why they're doing it this way. I'm just sitting there saying, I don't like that they're doing it this way, because it limits the audience.
Well, to be perfectly honest, what they ought to be doing is they ought to be giving us an animated Batgirl series based off the current run of Batgirl, which everyone is saying this is great, and it's cheerful and upbeat. And she's written the best she's been written in a long time. She's got a great new costume that actually looks like something you would wear as opposed to spandex.
Mm.
There's material that could be adapted, and hopefully we'll get that. But you know, and dumping this all on the lap of DC is a little unfair, because Marvel's animated pictures that they put out over the years, some of them got really dark.
Some of them, but not all of them. DC's batting 1,000 right now, going this direction. You know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see an animated JL8.
Sure, that'd be great.
Let's call Yale Stewart and say, "Hey, Yale." That would be fun, because that's accessible for the kids. And that's the big issue that I have with all of this is there's nothing there's nothing in the filmed media. The TV shows even sometimes are a little bit more intense than what you'd have. But the accessibility is limited to older ages. And that's a problem because once they age out, where are your next generation of customers coming from?
Well, but again, comic books traditionally for mostly ill, in my opinion, because, maybe not mostly ill, but certainly some element of ill, has been teenage boys and up.
Yeah.
So comic books since the 80s easily, if not the 70s, have been targeted more at teenagers than kids.
Yeah, you're talking about 4 years, Jason. I don't think that's going to affect much.
Not to say that there shouldn't be something out there for kids, because I got into comic books when I was a little kid too, and I think there should be something like that. But I also think that until the studios decide that they can sell something to that younger audience. We're not going to get it. And I think that right now, because again, studios are a business, not creatives. They are looking at what they're getting the return on their investment on. And as long as they're making money on that, and until they ditch the dumb idea that all animated stuff has to be aimed at teenage boys or boys in general.
Yeah, because they don't have any money.
It's
true. They're not gonna do anything for that demographic because they don't have any money.
Well, the problem with Young Justice and the reason, the honest to God reason they actually gave for canceling that show, is that more girls were watching it than boys, and they looked at the young female audience and said they're not gonna buy action figures. This was their actual argument.
Well, and some of that was the merchandising numbers. They were actually looking at sales numbers of action figures and merchandise, and that was the data they were using to back this up. Yes, more girls are watching, more families are watching. They're not buying the toys. And
but now
all of that
has their own DC superheroines line.
Yeah, the new girl. Yeah, the girls line, which is selling like hotcakes.
Yeah,
I mean this stuff is flying off the shelves.
Well, because girls are not this foreign creature that we can't understand.
Speak for yourself.
You know. Yes. Okay, Jason. I didn't say women. Women are mysterious.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah. Right. Okay.
Ha ha. Okay. No, the reality is that female audiences are just like male audiences. They like things, they don't like things. And they're not, you can't tie them up in a tiny little box where they say, all little girls want ponies and unicorns and flowers. And you can't just sit there and go, all little boys want sex and violence, because it's not the way it works. That's, you know, your demographic research is useful, but it's not the end.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, when it gets into the bean counter,
I don't even think it's useful.
it's a broad strokes useful. That's the only thing it's good for. But when you are dealing with money in the millions and millions of dollars, that's what they do. It's not right. It's not sensible. Yeah. And if you look at it with the eye of someone,
well, it's sensible in the money.
Do we know what demo Legends of Tomorrow is hitting?
I think they're doing pretty well in the adults 18 to 49, but I haven't seen the breakdown on any of that.
They're pulling from the same audience of Flash and Green Arrow. So whatever demographics you're hitting there, you're hitting in Legends of Tomorrow.
Yep.
You're not the odds of you gaining.
You're not getting a family viewing from Legends of Tomorrow.
Speaking of odds and Legends of Tomorrow, I want to talk about a specific Easter egg real quick, and then we're going to head out.
Sure.
Okay. There is a scene where Ray Palmer goes in his Iron Ant-Man suit outside the ship.
Yeah.
To save Sarah and Leonard Snart. So he goes out there and he's sealing the breach in the hull, and he floats away, and they get him back in the ship, and he's not breathing. They got to resuscitate him, and Gideon, our computer, our android, says that the odds of Mr. Palmer successfully reviving, you know, of the odds of successfully reviving Mr. Palmer are 3,720 to 1. And I about came out of my chair. I thought that was brilliant. And Twitter was dead silent on it. I was watching the feed. I was like, really? Nobody caught that? I mean, there was even a Wilhelm scream in this episode. You know, there were so many Star Wars Easter eggs, but that specific one, 3,720 to 1, and I thought, surely I'm not the only one that caught that. That was funny. And yeah, I was very disappointed in Twitter. Twitter, you disappointed me this week. Well,
CPR was totally wrong. There's no way she could have revived him with that improper CPR.
Yeah, you're supposed to be doing it to staying alive, not...
Yeah, and her arms are supposed to be straight, and she's supposed to be on her knees. And the fact that she did CPR totally incorrectly was very upsetting to me. That's what bothered me.
Like she about almost killed him with how hard that was hitting him.
Hold on. Jason, you're just now disappointed with Twitter?
No. I'm again disappointed with Twitter.
I thought the character development in the show was great this week.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah.
Between Heatwave and Captain Cold and their relationship.
Does anybody actually believe that Heatwave is dead?
No, not at all.
And then
he's shooting the tree behind him or something.
And then Captain Cold and White Canary's stuff is getting good. And even Firestorm's working better together.
Yeah, and that's good to see. And the dynamic between Sarah and Snart seems to be going, maybe not necessarily romantic, but that healthy respect for each other is growing. And that was good to see.
Maybe more like familial or acquaintances. Yeah.
Watching Sarah fight that dude was awesome. That was a great fight scene.
She always gets some really good characters.
Pirates was awesome.
Yeah.
Well, and to learn that his wife was almost his commanding officer, and she quit in order for him to be the golden child of the Time Masters, was a good bit of character development for the week. I'm still waiting for Jonah Hex to show up.
And to find out that Rip Hunter's not even his real name. It's just a code name that was given to him.
What do you think?
Well, that's actually good because Rip Hunter is a little too...
Yeah, who names their kid Rip?
Cheesy comic book name.
Yeah, well, what do you think his real name is?
Huh?
What do you think his real name is?
Jonah Hex, the 43rd.
I don't think it matters. Booster Gold. Does anybody else wonder who else Cher is going to hook up with? Because she's sleeping her way through the cast.
Well, she hasn't. Who? She hasn't slept with anybody yet.
I was going to say, what episodes are you watching?
Well, let's see.
He's watching the R-rated episode.
No, the R-rated cut. No. Yeah, coming out on DVD.
We are one cut to a commercial break away from her sweeping her way through the cast because.
She turned down. I mean, she's just now gotten together. Just kissed Ray and doesn't really, you know, there's no relationship there yet.
Who was before Ray?
Carter.
Nothing with Carter. He was trying to get with her, but she wasn't reciprocating. So
yeah, she didn't count
him. Until the end, and then she had her revelation that they were in love.
Right after he was dead.
Well, yeah, exactly. But it's like all of a sudden she's like, you know, is there an available male in the cast? Ta-da! you know.
I'm surprised Sonya's still watching.
Well, the only thing.
Well, according to Tim, this chick is sleeping with people, and I'm missing it. I'm like,
well,
what?
Here's
What's
the,
happening?
Here's the thing. Well, see, no, because Shayera didn't get.
No,
I mean,
I've secretly
no.
fallen in love with Palmer. That's why I'm sticking with this show.
Oh, yeah. Is that what it is?
There we go.
Well, see, and she didn't, do anything with Ray until he almost died.
This could very well be
a Florence Nightingale thing, and it doesn't last very long, more than one or two episodes.
The Picard,
oh, that's
the
right.
Legends of Tomorrow, if you will.
The
nature of the show is going to be that someone's going to almost die every week. So, I mean, and the reason for this is that the romantic subplot brewing between her and Ray, to me, feels very artificial.
It does,
very much like a setup for when Carter does come back.
Yeah.
We'll have a romantic triangle, and it just seems...
Yes.
And so yes, when she was dating...
I completely agree with that.
Yeah, actually, I think that triangle's not going to be Carter. I think that's going to be Sisko when he shows up.
Well, okay, it'll be all four of them then.
Grief.
But when you think about it, you know, she had this romantic relationship brewing with Sisko. She's got this, you know, the star-crossed lover, you know, thing going with Carter, and now this thing with Ray. I'm disappointed in the writers for this because they're making her.
She's a floozy, and you don't like it.
She's I get it. She's the DC television version of the new Starfire.
Gross!
I am concerned that they are going to sacrifice character development for romance.
Don't compare her to New 52 Starfire like that.
Don't compare anybody to New 52 Starfire, please.
Let's avoid comparisons to New 52 anything.
Right there.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, that's going to do it for us this week. Don't forget, of course, next week we're going to be off. We're going to come back the week after next to talk about all of the DC shows. By then... nope, because Flash and Arrow don't come back till the 22nd, 23rd. So we've got some time, but in the meantime, Gotham is still on. Gotham is back. Legends of Tomorrow is still on. Supergirl, I think, has got a few more episodes, and of course, we have the big.
Isn't the crossover coming up?
The
soon?
Crossover is the 28th. The Monday after Batman vs. Superman opens. The Monday after our 7th anniversary here at Sci-Fi for Me. So there's a lot happening inside that week's time. So we will be back with another discussion in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, if you've got opinions or suggestions or thoughts or complaints that you want to share with us, you can send those to roguesgallery@scififorme.com, or you can leave a comment on all the available spaces online. You can get your latest news over at scififorme.com. And, of course, we're on all of the social media. You can find us there. Just look up Sci-Fi for Me. And that's going to do it for us. I want to thank the panel today. Sonia Rodriguez.
Bye-bye.
And Jeff Hackworth.
See you later.
And Timothy Harvey.
Always a pleasure, guys.
And you out there, dear listener, thanks very much for joining us on this particular episode. And we will be back with more on the Rogues Gallery in 2 weeks' time.
This has been a presentation of Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Copyright 2016 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.